This is the beginning of Channel One Over. The beginning of Channel One Over. This is a tape of Suzanne Veldhuis in the office the last day. 10th week on Friday. And that's the 6th of May, 1969. Friday the 6th of May, 1969. In the office with Suzanne Veldhuis. She had to miss class. She sent me a word, and she came by to tell me about it. That's how she got came to be there. On Monday, she came to see me to talk, and I didn't show up. On Wednesday, she came to talk, and Darcy was there, and Darcy heckled her. Now, this time, at the same time, so she's put in a good deal of time over there. I don't know whether it's in tape or not. I said to her, Darcy's mean. She heckled you. Oh, Suzanne said, I like that. I love to argue. After this talk, it came to me clearer than ever how the missionaries I saw in the CBI theater in Burma, in China, I mean, and India, were so outstanding. They had been protected from these flattening pressures here at home, and the children in particular. They flowered over there. Suzanne's old enough to parry all this now in the school system. But there are not many she can talk to. I said to her, how did she get along in class? And she said, well, to start with, she talked, and then she didn't. Now, she hadn't talked in my class in some time, but I don't ask her to or encourage her to because I know her point of view. One of the students asked her what she was doing. She said she was in medicine. She didn't say she'd be a medical missionary and that she doesn't have a penny, as she says in this tape. She's applied to some school in Missouri. I think they've accepted her, but she's not had any word from them about scholarships and grants, and that's all she has to work with. We didn't work through the divinity school address. I just pushed her on points. It's so discriminating, the point she's reached, not many can reach it. These students certainly don't, in her Emersonian studies and in her religious studies. But I said, you've got to use discrimination. And when you study Matthew and find chapter 25, you can't just swallow that. You've got to be discriminating. It simply does not tally with anything else that Jesus talked about. You've got to figure there's such a thing as an insertion, and the word the Lord can't just be his own textual editor down here. And she let that pass.
Helped. If I'm not fully familiar with it now, I'd like to be helped to learn how to become more perceptive of it.
Yeah. Now that's what you picked up this time.
Yes. Yes. But I had thought about it before. I always valued it. But I just found that often I didn't either catch on or I didn't have the time to take the time to observe.
Well, you're conscious of it.
At times.
Well, now that's unusual. I think most people wouldn't be conscious of it.
I think that's true, too.
So much we do, we're just cluttered.
I know, cluttered. I know.
Or we push ourselves.
I think that's why I haven't thought of it so much, because I'm cluttered too, and I do push myself too.
Yeah. Come in.
Is Dr. Nelson been in today off?
He's in this morning.
He won't be back then.
Miles, did you become acquainted with experience?
Through these.
When she came in, I asked her that. Now, just what about what this course mean to you? And she started right out on experience in a quite open way. And then she started out on something else. And then when I turned the tape on, she slowed her up just a bit.
These people, in the books. Yeah. Now, was this many years ago? Like when you were in India, had you already begun to formulate ideas? No.
Very recent.
Yeah, and you think it's really helped you?
Oh. For such a simple thing, it seems like it's just like resuscitation.
Yeah.
It's like born again, you might say.
Yeah.
I feel it.
Yeah. Again, though, I am concerned that it's a born again thing of your spirit now, but it's that it's not permanent. Because I talk to so many people about their spirits and their souls, and most people, they listen, and they're eager to talk about it, or else they've thought about it to some extent, but never have they ever reached the point of actually seeing the desperate need of a force greater than their own. And I really stand in literal fear, because when they die, life is not going to be what they expected it to be.
You know, I think it's a refined intellect and personality to understand what it is. Now, it can be derived on the present, on the proper circumstances.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree. Well, to an extent, but my circumstances would probably be defined differently than yours.
Yes,
because mine would be a relation to Christ, through reading the Bible.
That's right.
And I...
But you see, you've gone so much further than other people have gone that there's just no compassion. Just no compassion. I think there's that much... I think they're off the base that far.
Yeah. Because you don't think they were capable of getting everything that he intended them to get.
I don't think they intended of getting any idea of the conversion either.
Yeah.
Or they don't get, you've got to have mental refinement to get most of that through them.
But I think that often that's the product.
Man!
That this mental refinement is often a product of the Holy Spirit's guidance in your life to help you refine your own life.
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid that some of my friends who have grown up with me, and not entirely since our lives were, in different places, but who I have seen every 4 or 5 years, and yet they, not having had any experience with Christ, have a different outlook on life entirely. And I just thank the Lord for giving me mine, but I don't know... if he, of course, I do feel he deserves most of the credit, but he gave me the ability to use the abilities I have, and to be wise enough to go a little further than most people.
Yes, sir. Now,
it's true.
Yeah.
In the church that I found here in Gainesville, and this is very rare, University Baptist, they do study directly from the Word of God. And this is really astounding, because, as you say, most of them have their little quarterlies. You follow exactly what is outlined here for you. There's no freedom for the teacher to express anything individually. It's all pre-written for her.
That's right. Just following directions. That's what it is. I know Emerson had that, things like that in mind in the divinity school there.
Yeah.
So that his vision really of the minister was to be the scholar.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah. Is that what he was himself, do you think?
Yeah.
He was?
In that order.
Yeah.
He was brought up as a minister. I don't know how he got off on this other. I don't know. It's amazing, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
You see, we just start these things. We don't take them very far.
And you pinch yourself on the brink of really, going somewhere. But then again, these little things in your life that demand your time just step in and prevent you from taking that extra step every time.
Now, what's happening to the freshmen, Suzanne? They don't trust it. I can't talk to them anymore. They just consider me an outsider, even class.
Do you think it's your idea? They changed in their response to your ideas. They don't find your ideas perhaps applicable to their own lives. It leaves them bewildered because it's something totally foreign to them. Because they've been brought up so differently. they haven't been exposed to this type of experience.
I don't talk about this with them, you see. I talk about what they say.
Yeah.
I talk, you know, I let them set the pace.
Yeah.
And we still don't know.
Do you find they talk among themselves when you're not there?
Let me tell you. Now, that's something I don't know.
In competition-wise?
No.
No.
Not exactly competition. It's just you don't know, so you haven't experienced. So that's how incompatible they were, you see. Now, you don't see them in that light.
I've been in some classes in which there was a situation like that. One student would say something, another one immediately rise to cut down what that person said.
Yes.
And then he'd sit back there with a big, sort of not a smug, you know, appearance. He had put the other person down, self-righteous me.
Yeah.
That happened in my physics class the other day. Some fellow came out with what I thought was a very good, it was a reasonable statement. The professor listened to it fine, and then some other fellow had to spout out with something that just cut down the other guy, and he just said it just so sharply and just sort of pierced him, and the poor fellow just sat there.
Yeah.
And the other one sat back. And I thought, that's sad. I mean, you have to do that to raise yourself.
Well, now, how do you thrive in that environment?
It makes me want to hold my peace and not speak. If people do that to me, I'd just as soon say, well, live in your ignorance. I'm not casting my pearls before you. That's what I would do.
Well, now, you didn't talk much in this class.
I know, because many times I was fearful of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the beginning, I did, and then I just didn't dare say a word.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll just be quiet and I'll listen, because often you gain more by listening.
Well, now, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
I think it'd be hard on you. As a teacher, I think perhaps I would ultimately either crumble or say, teach what you want.
You get so you just lecture.
Yeah.
You see, and then you're pretty safe. But now that's nothing compared to what a minister is subjected to.
Oh, I know. I've thought about that too when I see Reverend George, our minister. And most people don't realize it. I mean, it's really sad.
Well, I don't know. You know, you just do the best you can. I never have. I'm just the eternal presence of evil.
Yeah.
And that little passage I worked on this morning, you see, where Miles plays the piano.
Yeah.
You see, it's a glorious little scene.
Yeah.
But it overlays the simulation.
Yeah. That's when little Sora was escaping.
Yeah.
You know, that happened two other times, too. Remember at the window, he had arranged with Flora to sneak out of bed to keep the governess occupied, or to take the governess's attention to the window, that's right. And one other time, this was also unique. Whenever they thought, they would make an arrangement for the one to leave, so as not to clash anymore.
Yes.
I thought that was fairly wise.
Yes.
Although maybe it's not, because if you don't get it out, it might harbor.
And you see, in following Jesus, you see, you still have the little pitfalls of the institution.
Yes, because
so
we're
human.
We still have our old sinful nature in us.
But you don't know, unless you've got the discrimination, you don't know whether it's institution you're following or what Jesus said.
Yes, that's true. And I think the two are deeply intertwined many times. Because originally, we'll just take as a blatant example, the Constitution or the Declaration, the Constitution of the United States, supposedly drawn by the help, with the help of religious men, under the influence or guidance of God. And so America, as such, had laws and so forth which abided by the Word of God. In that case, they were directly related. But I think now we've wandered and drifted so far away that the two are just separated by a huge chasm.
Well, but you play all the time. Now, even, you see, you've got to face it. Even the scriptures, you've still got your additions.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you've got to be scholar enough to see what they are.
Yeah.
And your Matthew 25, you see, is one of your very difficult, very, very difficult passages.
What was that on?
That's the, you know, the signs of the...
Oh, the latter times?
Oh,
with the sun being turned into darkness?
Yeah. You see, now that's not... No relationship to what all the other salt.
No, it doesn't. But it was just thrown in to warn us of the signs of the last days.
Well, it's also thrown in as sort of. Now you always got to consider this, that it's also an institutionalized thought that's thrown in that Jesus, that you can't attribute to him, Jesus.
No, Jesus himself.
You simply have got to make those distinctions. I mean, the mind has simply got to do that.
Unless you say that it was the Spirit of God revealing these things to other men, not through Jesus, but through their own minds.
Yes, but you also, you see, you got to admit corruption.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all handed down.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
Yeah. So you see, now look, but look how far along you've got to be to make those decisions. My neighbors don't make those decisions. They'll hop on something like that, you see, and all of Jesus' ministry go begging. They're so interested in the signs of the time to come.
Well, see, that's the least of our, should be the least of our thoughts. What should occupy them are Jesus' teachings now.
I hear it all the time. Well, anyhow, we touched on it like this, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, now you see, the other day...
But that's good.
Yeah. She's all right. She doesn't cross me like that.
As she did me?
No.
But I like crossing her back, too. I quite enjoy that.
Did
you? Yeah. You know, I used to love arguing. In fact, I still do. I always like challenges like that.
Yeah. Who are your buddies?
My buddies?
On this campus.
I can't say I have that many. I'd say about five people.
That's lucky.
Five that are good friends. That's the most.
That you can talk to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody
in
Milo group? No.
No, not a single person.
Nobody I know.
No. There are a couple that I would, like the fellow that sits next to me, John. He's a very nice person. But, and the rest I just haven't gotten to know that well. I mean, we go in class and you see us, we just sit there. Everybody still knows their few little friends in there, and they keep together. And if you're not exactly included, fine. Nobody cares about getting to know you.
Yeah.
And even if you put forth an effort, and this is what really used to distress me terribly, and I remember it did my mom too, because my mom was a warm type person,
yeah,
very perceptive as to the feelings of others. And she would go out of her way to make another person feel at home and to get to know the other person. And often people mistook that for some type of thrusting of herself upon them, and they just stayed away from her. And it made my mom extremely sad. It really did. Because, and this I find has happened to me so many times.
Well, let me tell you, I think of that very often. You know, one of the chief things they have to do is protect themselves. But people take advantage of them.
Right.
You see, they're open and honest.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, you've got to reach the point where you kind of harden yourself to it, where you don't mind having your throat cut.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know how you do that. But you know, you get to the point where you don't take it as a mortal sin,
right,
if somebody,
right,
trips you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But and still go ahead, you know, and... be forthright, what do you call it, like you want to be.
Yeah.
Religious writers are not very good, generally. You've got to take them for what they are. Now that you see, in some ways, they are superior, they excel. But they're not good, their minds don't work as well as these fellows.
Because they haven't experienced it themselves?
I don't know what it is. But you see, this fellow who wrote about... The last one, you know.
The good and evil, the sin,
yes,
the darkness.
Yes. Hey, see, he's gifted.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Well, you see, that opens up the world such as nobody in the religious world can do. I don't know anyone in the religious world can open up things that clearly. Now you see, he doesn't do things that religious thinkers do. He's not a religious thinker, but he does things that they can't do.
Hmm.
I see.
Because he's not bound by what they're bound by.
Possibly. I don't know. You see,
yeah,
there's so much I don't understand.
Yeah.
But it's nice of him.
Yeah.
Well, when you were shopping around for a little course literature, you didn't know what you'd get there.
I sure didn't. I'm glad I took it though. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's taken a lot of time because I'm not an exactly fast reader, I don't think, and I'd like to understand and really get as much as I can as I go along. But
well, what did you think you would have wanted when you did that?
I just wanted to gain from authors. From the experiences related by authors, a little something that could enrich my own life.
Such as
many of the things I've seen. Besides, the whole idea of experience has sort of been opened up even
more.
You
won't get that in a literature.
Not in other ones.
No.
So I was fortunate to get in this one.
What do you think you'd get now?
I figured I could get it myself.
You wrote that little note, you know, to me.
Yeah,
on the day, and I was so pleased with it.
Yeah,
and I was hoping, you know, that it would please you.
Yeah,
and I just wondered at the time. Well, now what does she think she wants?
Yeah. Well, see, I figured if the teacher wasn't like that, well, then I could do it independently through my own reading.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to. I'd have no other alternative.
So what do you? What did you think you wanted? Such as.
Well, I'll just describe it through that book, the first 100 pages of Moby Dick. That's what I really enjoyed. All those little passages in there, straight action, without the art. Again, as you say, it's the art that ruins something. And when I read that essay I wrote again on Thoreau, I just could, I mean, really, it was sickening. It's just nothing but thoughts, abstract, you know, big, long, involved, meditative, ponderous type language. And that isn't good. I mean, it might be good for that particular type of writing, but inappropriate for this. So, I...
Well, you know, I had something in mind like that, but I didn't know how to say it.
Yeah.
That's what I kept saying. I don't know what to say, but tie it to Thoreau.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many things about Thoreau. He observes.
Yeah.
And then he does that Sean Clare business.
Yeah.
And all like that. And he reports like the Luma.
Yeah.
And he's a scholar.
Yeah.
That's as close as I could get, you know, something. Oh, it'd be nice to have another time. But
it sure would, but I'll be gone. I'm leaving, Lord willing, finances permitting. This is my last quarter here, since I should be going to Missouri in September.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But see, as of yet, they haven't notified me of any financial assistance, and since I, you know, work and with that, with scholarship and loan and grant, that's my only, you know, source of funds. I'll need complete assistance, other than the bit I can earn this summer. Then I have a rather large.
Well, I'll tell you what, if it doesn't work out, you can come out there and run my
your little farm.
At least we'll have something to eat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed learning things from you this time.
Yeah. Well, I reciprocate the honor.
It's so nice. Just so nice. I was pleased to look back there and see you there.
I'm sorry I disappointed you today. Oh, dear.
Let me see.
I see a young lady loaded with two packages, and they'll stare and stare and stare, but they'll never stop.
They're afraid to.
I don't know if they're afraid to or not. I think it's just pure lack of concern.
No, and I wouldn't stop.
No.
Unless I was out in the country. Then
yeah.
I would. Of course, I'd go
that reminds me, Dr. Miles, that Negro lady whose daughter lost her legs, what was her name?
Carrie.
Where is she now? Because I sent her a card and I thought her name was Anna Gibson. That's what the old lady told me. And it wasn't, because I phoned up the hospital and there's no Anna Gibson there.
Let me tell you, Carrie.
What do you tell these people after their speeches?
What do they tell us?
What do you tell them?
I don't tell them anything.
You don't? Oh, dear.
That's some world, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I know.
You're going to get fired.
At last, I'd played that little tape that Jamie Finelli made in her speech, the rules and regulations at her residence hall, the curfew, and that's beyond Suzanne's experience. But the most enlightening thing she said was that revelation she had as to what her style and that little piece on Thoreau that she wrote. And after she wrote it and spent so much time on it, and I said to them, I wish they'd pin it, attach it somehow to Thoreau, she saw what she had done. Now that's just genuine, and that's just revelation. That just came to her. I didn't tell her. All I said about it was something nice. She really had it couched in big words. She had framed it. Oh, my. So that's the end of that little in the office on Friday. Friday of the 10th week, the last day, where Suzanne Veldhuis reports on her little bit on the course and talks. The tape's not good. She was sitting a little too far from the microphone. It wasn't speaking quite loud enough, but you can make it out. Friday, the 6th of June, 69. This is Channel 1 over around 3:15. Friday, the 6th of June, 69. This is Saturday. This is Saturday, the 7th of June, 69. We're expecting old George Ganaway out. I'll show him over the place and go down to the store, and then we'll sit here and eat a little bit. I didn't know what to do with the microphone, and it just came to me. I had a dog collar on it, and I just hung it on the gooseneck lamp and slipped it over there. And you see, that worked out nice. I just taped the wire along with the electric wire and then laid some of those plums on the base of it and put the pepper and salt by it. It's camouflaged enough. So this is Saturday, the 7th of June, 69. We're expecting George Ganaway.
He had it, but he was disqualified for having drugs. And I don't think it was. I know there was one last year that was disqualified at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure whether that was it or not.
Yeah.
I start looking around, you know. I can't get in the mood to study. I have to be in a blank walled room, you know, where all I have is the book to look at.
Just a sale. Just the old me?
Oh, yeah, I've been plodding along. So I've been going to school about 21 months straight now, I guess.
Oh.
So I'm about ready for a little vacation, I think.
Summer, too?
Last summer, yeah. As soon as I graduated, I went into summer school to start taking some of the pre-med courses I needed, some zoology courses. That was at UNC.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as I got out of there, I came right down here. That's why I haven't been to Cape Cod in 2 years. I'm kind of anxious to get back up there.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a little while, anyway.
You'd be up there this week, won't you? Next week.
Yeah, it'll be... I'll be going home next Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'll leave as soon as we can after that.
Mm-hmm.
And after I get back down to West Palm Beach later in like around August sometime, if you're here.
To be here.
You know, just during the day I could come up sometime.
We'll be here.
Oh, what is your address here? If I, you know, if I were to come, I'd want to write first to let you know I was coming.
Evanston.
Just Evanston, eh? And it'll get to you. Okay.
Yeah, you. We didn't go in the store, Faye. We just stood outside.
Of all things, you didn't see it.
Oh, I saw it. I was looking around inside there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you see the mailboxes?
I did. I saw those from the inside the door.
Well, I have a mailbox in there, but you don't need the number of these to know them. Evanston. Captain Evans settled the place. Evinston. Captain Evans.
Thank you.
Not at Florida.
You just go ahead about your business.
Well,
do you notice any difference here and...
Well, I don't know. One problem is that I've graduated now, and I feel like a graduate student, and a graduate student just feel different than undergraduates, you know, anyway. So I feel kind of out of it anyway around the Florida campus, and it's such a big campus that anybody could feel that way, kind of estranged. Yeah, to meet anybody, because... like I said, I've been the first two quarters I was pretty busy and had to study pretty hard, and this quarter, since I'm only a part-time student, I've been going home and working for my father. So I really haven't...
Working for your father?
Yeah.
You told me about your father. What are you doing?
He was... Well, until he sold out a few years ago, he was president of Dairy Queen of Florida.
Oh, yes. You were telling us over at lunch that day.
That's right. And then he went into... now he's going into Dairy Queen in the Caribbean. He's trying to develop it down there. And since he had a heart attack last summer, he hasn't been able to take off himself. So I made a trip to Puerto Rico for him.
Did it slow him down?
Oh, slow him down. Yeah, he's just started driving himself now in a car, and in the past month, he had his heart attack last August 1st.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty bad one.
And bad enough to slow him down.
Oh, yeah, he didn't get out of the hospital till the middle of September, and then had to stay.
But now, he was a speculator, and the man who works with him is a businessman.
No, I wouldn't say that. He's... you might say he's both. Oh, I said that there was he liked to have his own hours, to make his own hours, and so he had another fellow who worked with him as kind of his man Friday, who did most of the paperwork, you know, a good deal of the paperwork, the 9
promoting
to 5 hours.
Paperwork.
Yeah, my father is actually the promoter. He's a good promoter.
Not a speculator, I'm a promoter.
I suppose he's a speculator, too.
Well, not the... Yes, okay. But you haven't been much help to him. You're not interested in him.
No, I can't say as I am really interested in what he's doing.
Chief Rowe was interested in all that. That will make him all.
I don't know. I think he kind of abandoned pencil making. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but maybe after a long time, he improved the pencil scratch.
That's true.
I just need him yet. George wouldn't profess any interest at all in that business, would he, say, last time we were here talking?
No.
And he still doesn't. Well, I don't know.
I wouldn't really like to do it. It's that no matter how honest you want to be, and no matter how fair you want to be to everyone, you know, somebody somehow gets hurt. Like there were two parties that wanted to have the rights to open stores in Puerto Rico. My father had to choose between the two parties, and both of them were about ready to sell out their businesses and move down to Puerto Rico. And my father had to more or less promise it to both of them to keep both of them from leaving. You know, he had to. Neither one of them was absolutely sure, and he didn't want to tell one. Well, you know, I've got another hot party here on the line, so you better give me a decision quick. Because he thought that he doesn't like high pressure tactics.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried not to pressure either of them, but at the same time, he couldn't tell either one.
And you got me on the wrong schedule, I think.
No.
I thought I was going to get something else.
No, that's yours.
Like on the farm in North Carolina, and I've never figured out what they are or what they taste like or anything.
Collard greens.
Mm-hmm.
If you just talk about them.
What are they exactly?
I see.
Any past her house when we were
right out there, though,
oh, right there.
Mm-hmm.
What do they make of you coming up with a tape recorder like this? And have you been doing that for some time now? Or are they used to it?
I bet they do.
I don't know. If Faulkner had said that, where would he be now?
He does, now this is just a little excerpt, but he edits these things, and that's marvelous when he has. And that's just something, that's just a little conversation last night, whether you'll ever use that or not.
Yeah.
You know, but he has a beautiful tape on what he calls the Three Voices.
I think you played that for us.
Maybe you had, that's Elijah.
I think you played that in class for us.
But it's the editing, I think, that counts and throws and shows you what he's doing, what comes of it.
There's nothing.
Just real poetry. Days, hours, days when I went away in the field.
Before I forget about it, that was a delicious meal. I haven't had anything like that in a long time.
Oh, thank you. Well,
and I just to get back up to Cape Cod, because the people who live in the house that my sea captain uncle lived in, which is right next to our house, have a fairly good-sized garden in their backyard. And the woman just spends practically all her time in the garden. And she's the wife of a retired lawyer. And he spends all his time over on Nauset Beach bass fishing, and she spends all her time in the garden. And so he brings us back bass, and she brings us fresh vegetables, so we live pretty high.
You know what I mean?
This is just outside of Hanover, you say? That's right. We picked up our Volkswagen in Wolfsburg. Do you know where that is?
Mm-mm.
That's not too far from Hanover.
I never got out of grip frame when I was there.
I've traveled extensively in Alachua County.
You know, that's curious.
I'll be going to eat ice cream or watermelon or both.
I'm resigned now. I'm with the party.
Mm-hmm. People, I guess, eat less in cold weather, but I usually eat more for some reason. When I'm real hot, I just kind of lose my appetite. So, maybe I belong in the north, I don't know. My parents don't like the heat a lot, and that's why they always like to go back to Cape Cod in the summers. And my mother just kind of wilts away about around the beginning of May. She's ready to leave.
Oh, really?
Oh, summer's got hot season. He loves it. It never gets too hot.
Yes, sir.
Ian Emily Dickinson.
I don't imagine she'd like to be hot, but one of my earliest recollections is just sweltering in that summer heat. Just sweltering. I don't know. I just took to it. I've been up in the northern climates, and you get used to it, but I can't say that I long to be back.
Well, I've always thought it's easier to keep warm than just to keep cool. You can always put on more clothes, you know, if it gets too cold. But.
Well, I don't keep cool. I just, my bodily temperature goes right up.
Just enjoy the heat, right?
He really does.
And it doesn't depress me, doesn't slow
you down at all?
No, I can think as well as ever could. I couldn't do it very well either way.
And even in August, you know, when it's humid. And last year, we got goaded into making.
Hey, hi. Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you grow up on a farm there? Or were you
half and half. I live in a little town, work outside. You know, relatives and all that stuff. Yeah.
So all this kind of actually kind of came natural to you, didn't it?
Yeah, I've always, everywhere I've been, always been out of the country.
Why? You grew up in the country too?
Well, just a little town. No. You know, but I love them.
They are because they don't have to be for you. You're not really dependent upon all this, you know, for survival like some people are. And I think that's what Thoreau noticed about the farmers, you know, when he said they just really didn't enjoy their work because they knew they had to do it to survive. But, you know, when you go out and plant things, you do it because you really want to. You know that you could survive without doing it since you have another income. And I think that's what allows you to enjoy, you know, to really truly just enjoy the experience.
Well, I don't know. Well, now, let me tell you,
How was she the first time you approached her? I mean, did she know you were, that you know, like that you were also from University of Florida, that you talked there?
Don't say we're from University of
Florida. This that's a different world. You keep that world out.
I never
that thought. You see, he even uses our language.
Well, some extent.
Pretty much.
Sure.
You see, it's one of the first things that there's a little church down here we used to do.
Like you, I can't explain what I see.
No, you don't have to.
Yeah.
But it's a way of life, and it just does me a great deal of good to go down to the store and see Fred Woods. He's a storekeeper. That's his.
Oh, he is a storekeeper.
He's a storekeeper. Now he knows something. He knows. If there's anybody in need in this whole community, he knows about it. Hey, Dave.
Yes,
very, very dramatic. Very, very interesting.
I see. He went.
Genuine is interesting. That little store down there is the first genuine store of that type that I've ever seen, really. Up in Cape Cod, they have a few stores that used to be that way. And they've been bought out by, you know, commercial people who have made them up again to look the way they were before, but they're not, you know, they're made up that way, just to look that way. And inside they'll sell the penny candies and things like that, you know.
It's simulated.
Yeah, it's all simulated, and the boards just look old. They're not really old, and it's all, you know, just like a. Like you find in Hollywood or something, where they put up all the false fronts.
Sure.
And that's the first genuine store and genuine storekeeper I've really ever seen. Mm. Except
and those nails on those boards are there.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
And the people out here know, the old citizens out here can almost tell you what sign this nail tacked up there.
Hmm.
Too.
Yeah.
And they don't want anything changed. They want it just like that.
What,
I can't blame them for that.
Yeah. What sticks with you from Emerson?
From Emerson?
Mm-hmm.
I think things that that stick with me were mainly were about what he was saying about trusting in yourself, trusting in your own, you know, that gleam of light he talked about. That's I've always wanted to be my own person. I mean, not necessarily to follow the put so much reliance in the wisdom of others, but myself. But I've always felt myself as being rather ignorant most of the time, and that's why, you know, I couldn't really trust myself. And I think in reading him, I've gotten a lot more confidence in that sort of thing, in being a genuine person. So I don't know. It's hard to explain the kind of feeling I got.
He goes into
Well, it's he's kind of interesting in that he was celebrating the common man, you know, and he wasn't a common man, and it's really hard to realize how he could understand so well. I mean, he lived a rather uncommon life himself, and so he wasn't. I don't think he was necessarily the he was just good at putting things into the abstract, I guess.
He must have been pretty gifted, you know. He was.
Well, obviously, I guess.
Yeah.
And all the others were just abstractions now.
Waiting to meet a genuinely great man. There was a time up to a few years ago when I thought that there were an awful lot of them around alive today, and now I'm beginning to wonder if there are really any at all. You know, I used to think that people like, well, the President of the United States has to be a great man.
Yeah.
Boy, that idea, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
that idea.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Today, a person who is a great man usually really isn't. He's just well publicized, you know, or he has a good agent, or something like that. And I think the place that you're going to find a great man is somewhere back in the hills, you know, where you can find a genuine person, because I don't know, people are they're just blown out of proportion now, like. John Kennedy is going to be a hero to the next generation.
Yeah.
And he was certainly probably a great man, unless you lived in West Palm Beach and heard all the stories about him from over in Palm Beach, boy.
Yeah.
But he was. I'm sure that he never. Excuse me. My nose is still stuffed up from that cold. I don't think that he ever realized he was a really great man. You know, he's just an example of how a nation that's in need of heroes and in need of great men can immortalize, you know, mm-hmm. an average human being.
Yeah.
And because who was the guy who. I can't remember his name now, but he had all these theories on hero worshiping, and he felt that that America was a nation of hero worshipers. We were a nation of people who really needed heroes to worship. We needed great men to admire, and that if a person stepped into the right position at the right time, then we made him into a great man, whether he really wanted to be one or not. And I don't know.
Seems to me, because you don't know the student situation.
Well, that would be considerable respect for your professors.
There was, but the great many of the professors at Duke had very little interest in teaching. There was very little interaction between the students and the professors. It was, they were, I was sure that I'd meet some great men at Duke, you know, and I don't recall any any great men. I'm, among any of my professors, they I don't know what it is I was looking for, but whatever it was, I didn't find it. I found a lot of things to admire, you know, but I've never really met a great man. I wonder if I had lived, you know, back in the day of Washington or of Lincoln or of these, if I would have considered them great men, if I'd known them. But unfortunately, the closer you get to a person, the what's his name, Martin Buber, who his I-thou relationship, you know, whereas, and that you can't find one. Sinus drainage. I'll be all right. That what's happened to me is that all the I-thou relationships I've ever had, you know, have always turned into I-it relationships, you know. And I've you can have that with an institution too, you know, like a great institution, you might say like Princeton or Harvard or something like that, you know. If you've never attended an institution, it'll always remain kind of like an I-thou relationship. Yeah. It'll be a it'll be something fantastic. But once you've been there and you see a lot of its weaknesses and things like that, and you realize that it's run by people who are just as human as you are and and have their fallacies, then and that becomes an I-it relationship. And
bureaucrats.
So I'm waiting for that one relationship where I'll meet a man that always remains on a level somehow above mortal, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think of something.
This is what I mean about. I've never really met anybody like your husband before, and this is, I mean, as far as professors go, and the way he conducts a course and everything like that. And another thing about great men is that they're never really thought of as being great until after they're dead. You know?
Are you trying to spread a little light, you know, whether you're in the pulpit or in for the class or hoeing potatoes?
But yeah,
that's all that really counts. It's somebody.
I think that he's a genuine person, you know, like most of the people who live around here, and that's something that just impresses me. I don't know what it does to talked at and not talked to, and I've always been the same way. I've been used to being talked at, you know,
and most students resist. George, they resist any change.
That's right.
Somebody who sees guys suffer through this business, I'm likely to say, to heck with it. I don't think it's worth it. But, you know, you can't say
that. I don't know whether they so much resent it as they find it hard to cope with having never run across it before.
Resent is a small word there. I mean, but since they don't understand, they don't have the time to give a thought to it.
Well, after a while, the person gets a lot of notes, and he can just pick them up and go to class and recite and go on. I have been able to use old notes. I sort of get into it, and I guess in what we're talking about, I can't think about anything else for a few days, you see. I can't do anything else.
I have seen him teach the same thing year after year after year, and it's always with an excitement.
Yeah.
And that is really something.
I don't know.
You know, I mean...
That's because he finds something new every time he looks at it.
Because he sees something new in it, too, with the students he works in. And this is just like a new course.
There's only one other teacher I can remember who came close to doing anything like that, and... it was a psychology professor, and the students confronted him the same way that a lot of them confront Dr. Miles, and because this particular professor would, rather than just stand up there and lecture through the period, The course was in personality theory, and you know, people like Freud and Sullivan and all these who had their personality theories, well, he would kind of touch on them, but at the same time, he was a kind of a dynamic professor, because he was developing a theory as he went along, and he'd have inspirations while he was just standing up there in the front of the class. You know, he'd be talking about something,
yeah,
and it would lead to an inspiration. And so then he'd just stand there for a few minutes and think about it, you know, and then continue on. And it was an amazing process, because you could see it at work right in front of you. Here's a man who's not just presenting something, you know, that he's got in front of him there, but who's actually thinking it out right in front of you. And most of the students, I won't say most of them, but a lot of them were impatient with this sort of thing, because they just wanted to have something that they could write down, you know, in their notes. But he would go along, and sometimes he would go back, retrace his steps and go in a different direction and things like this. And this just played havoc with their notes, because they'd have to go back and scratch things out and change them.
Yeah.
Because he was dynamic. And he was, to me, it was marvelous to see a person in action like this, whereas most professors were very dry and just read off the notes. You know, they had a notebook, and that was their class as far as they were concerned, and they just read off their notes for the whole semester. And he's the only one who's come close to doing anything like Dr. Miles has, I would say.
It's sort of like Bergman directs a movie.
Yes.
And yes, specializes on his speech, you know, no script or anything, but this is the idea.
They got the script, you know, ahead of them, but they just live it. They just live it and react to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Now, you see, in that class that you were in, that went on Emerson, there were several in there from time to time that sort of showed they could handle something. But then they get scared. They next time I called on them, they weren't there. Well, now, you see, George, you got to live with that. You simply have to live with it.
Well, you said sometime during class, in fact, several times, that the person who really thinks usually doesn't say anything. You know, he's usually the quiet person. You were talking about how the people who had the I can't remember what subject it was on particularly. I think it was on conservation, is what you were talking about, and how the loudest people were the people who were who did the least thinking or something like that. But I think it's true that somehow that when you when you do think a lot and you're satisfied with what you're thinking about, that you really don't have a tendency to broadcast it.
I don't know what that is, but I've found that after, you know, in a class or anywhere, after a person catches on, he's willing to sit and
he clams up,
think, or you know, you don't need to. Don't need to say too much once he catches on. And in the end of the class I'm in, once you catch on, that's all there's time. It's sort of simple from there.
Well, once you do catch on, then it's easy to follow your train of thought, and you really don't have any questions to ask, because
you follow.
Yeah, you do follow.
It just seems so simple to me, because it's all just an inquiry.
Yeah.
And you simply can't say this is the way it is, this is right or wrong.
Well, students aren't used to inquiring.
Quiet thing is the inquiry.
They're not used to asking questions. They're used to being told what's right, you know.
Now
I was asking him a few days ago, I think, about the publish or perish rule. You
mm-hmm.
heard about that.
Yeah.
And how professors are almost forbidden to associate with their students a lot in a lot of institutions because they have to spend so much time on their research. They're required to publish a certain number of papers each year, so forth, if they want to, if they want to get their tenure, I guess. And this is especially true in the scientific fields, you know, in physics and chemistry and things like that. They've got to publish papers. And this is kind of put a limit on it. This is real true at Duke, I'm pretty sure, too. That's why a lot of the professors don't associate that much with the students. And
that's the most disarming boy I ever saw. He said, you know, this is the first time that I've ever been to a professor's home for dinner.
With all those gifts.
With all those gifts. He said, I never felt that a professor cared. And he said, I can see that your husband lives the life he teaches. And he said, it's the only real person I've known.
Yeah.
And he carried on up and down that lane. He said, you can be sure I'll come back.
Yes.
And he said, you can be sure I'll come back. I said, George, it's hard to believe that you haven't known your professor. He said, they've never seemed to care. He said, I wish Dr. Miles was in a small college where everyone would know what he does. I said, well, that would be fine, but you know, in a small college, you've got lots of problems, too. He said, yes, but they know. Isn't that interesting?
Cute.
Isn't that cute? Yeah. Perceptive. And he said, I guess I've been very lucky to have had him. I know I've been lucky to have had him and the one other that has been similar. And he says, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't had any other professors.
He can get this stuff himself. He can go to the library and read the books. He is very dependent on a professor.
Well, that's it. Interesting when he said, once you've seen the light and seen the direction, then you just go along because you haven't any problem. Of course, it works the other way. If you don't see the light, then you don't open your mouth either. I said to him coming up the lane, I said, well, you have a few, a professor has to have a little help along. He has to, if the class doesn't respond, he said, yes, but, you know, they can tell when somebody is responding.
Yeah.
And please is what they're doing. It's just, and you notice how easy he was?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't
have to talk.
Didn't have to talk, but he talked when he needed to. And when you played, now Bessie was lost. Is even lost on me. I don't think that's very interesting. It doesn't give a picture of Bessie, nor J.R., nor the watermelon.
I couldn't start with
the
other one. See.
I know it.
You got to lead up to it.
So, but that's right. But the relief, I mean, the contrast. And then the minute Miss Daisy started, I watched George. The minute she started, he started smiling. He didn't miss a word. Now, he asked a question, you know, about the moss, but then he didn't pursue it. And did you hear him say, that's beautiful. That's a prize, he said. Priceless, he said. That's priceless.
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 That's the visit with George Gunaway, this late this Saturday.